And I'd like to welcome all of you to this meeting of the Committee on State-Owned Enterprises. Do we have any apologies?
I've received two apologies from Mr. Nana, who is a director. Mr. Chikova has attended another portfolio for the Division of Public Education. Mr. Mukwena and Ms. Michael, they are on their way. They just a little bit late.
Okay. The item really on our agenda is a briefing by the Department on Long-Term Procurement Strategy of State-Owned Companies in terms of supporting local industries and small businesses. I'll invite the DC. Honorable Mutema.
I'm so sorry to do this.
Nothing.
But it's not by self that I put this on the it doesn't have to be on the agenda, but I think especially because the DG is here, we have to congratulate the ministry and his team on implementing the recommendations of this committee before they receive the report on the South African Express issue.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I think that was on behalf of the committee. Gigi, you lead us.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. Chair, I agree with you. We pretty much know each other, but I do want to take this opportunity to introduce the newest DDG appointment at DPE, which is a recent to my right, Jackie Motsane, who I know you would have seen before as a member of the department, but has recently just been promoted to Deputy Director General.
Congratulations, and to wish you well during your tenure in that position. We hope that you, and I think you will definitely add value to the work of the department. And we have confidence in you.
Now, Chairperson and members, Jackie is going to be looking after this area of work that we're going to talk about today, which we're reopening a new front in the oversight role of the department. You will know that for years now we've been grappling with how we actually ensure that state-owned companies, especially in their procurement and capital investment activities, that they really drive industrialization. At the moment in the country, this is the only area where, as government, we have leverage. Elsewhere in markets, the private sector responds to incentives and disincentives as they perceive. And in the context of very depressed global economic conditions, we know that there is no appetite for massive investments coming from the private sector, and that those could only really happen if the state leads. And so procurement activities and capital expenditure of SOEs can act as a powerful signal to unlock private capital, which we know is abundant and huge amounts, but we have yet to actually tap into that space. So this work is exciting. A few years ago, CDE started a program called Competitive Supply Development Program, CSDP, which has progressed to a level where we think we can now take it to the next step stage. And so our presentation will give you a sense of the work that we've done over the years, and where we have come to, and where we would like to take this going forward. So the areas we'll look at will be the kind of methodology, procurement methodology, because it's really about how you change the way in which the companies procure, that they procure in ways that contribute to developing vibrant supplier industries, as such, supply industries that can operate in what is essentially a globalized market. We will give you a sense of the extent which these new approaches to procurement have been embedded in the companies themselves, the extent which the companies have built their capacities in this space. And we'll also give you a sense of some successful case studies in this space. Of course, as everywhere, also confronts some challenges. We do have challenges in the area of skills, also within the SOEs themselves. We do have some issues with the procurement legislation, the extent to which we apply procurement policies and legislation, particularly the triple PFA agreement. And yet, I think what we really ought to get to is to find a progressive balance, what I call a progressive balance, between what the Constitution and legislation call us with regard to how we procure, and they use the word economy and efficiency of our procurement, or simply the value for money, finding a balance between that, whilst at the same time allowing for learning and development in supply industries, which is inevitable if we are building sustainable and globally capable and local suppliers. So I think there's somewhere where we need to get there in that space. There are also challenges with regard to policy gaps. And then, of course, the usual one, which continues to dabble us, which is coordination, high level of coordination within the state. So, as I said, we will give you a sense of the work we are doing here, and we look forward to the support that the committee can provide to this work, particularly in holding us as a department, but more importantly, our state-owned companies accountable with regard to how we deliver. So, with that introduction, I'm going to ask Pamela Mahomet, who has been working in this space for a few months now, to give us a presentation and then we can have a discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you this morning. Can you all hear me clearly? What I hope to show you today is that there are profound changes that are taking place in Transnation and ESCOM. They have embarked on a journey of transforming and changing the way they do business, how they think about procurement. It's really not a linear journey. It's at times very chaotic, and it's systemization. My presentation today will demonstrate that there have been substantive changes in both these state-owned companies. Things are changing, and we are moving in the right direction. Transnet and ESCOM have developed SNI development plans, and they've provided us with drafts of it, but they haven't actually formally delivered the document to the shareholder. We would like to suggest to the committee that, they ask Transnet and ESCOM for a presentation on their plans, but nevertheless, what I am going to provide the committee with today is insight and tools to understand and assess the plans, essentially to provide you with a context. Now, given the weather in Cape Town with the clouds over the mountain, we thought we'll play you a movie. What the movie is really about is captures a week-long boot camp which we had with Transnet, ESCOM, SAA, and some of the national government departments around procurement. In fact, it was quite a historic event in the sense that you have all of these organizations in one room, really thinking about, you know, procurement and how the state does procurement differently so that you have the developmental impact that you're looking for.
On the 17th of June 2012, the Department of Public Enterprises, in partnership with state-owned enterprises ESCOM and Transnet, convened a boot camp at Kibbutz Kroon Conference Center, North Pretoria. The boot camp was a think tank for supply development imperatives and localization strategies. The objective of the boot camp was to optimize the impact of the investment program. Shareholder objective of the build program is to procure so as to optimize the enterprise life cycle value of capital assets procured, the unlocking of investment by FOC customers, the development of relevant FOC supply chain capability and capacity, the transformation of the economy.
There are two key roles in the Department of Public Enterprise and the ultimately, it depends on the quality of conversations that's had between a variety of different stakeholders. And, you know, each of them bring different perspectives, which are, you know, different relevant perspectives to the process. Our role as the Department of Public Enterprise is actually to enable the conversation, you know, so that we get into a strategy that is both pragmatic, but also, you know, that enables a high level of collaboration between the stakeholders. Secondly, you know, we play an important role around monitoring overseeing the implementation of the supplier plan so that, you know, we're ensuring that there's adequate FOC focus and commitment to the program.
The boot camp was open to participants from other relevant government departments, like the Department of Science and Technology, the Department of Trade and Industry, National Treasury, to name a few. The participants were divided into 10 teams and subject to an intense daily program, which included presentations from the different stakeholders and private sector, tackling a hot topic and assignment. Presentations to the participants included the integration of supplier development and transformation into strategic sourcing, GE, SA Supplier Challenges, EME Presentation, DCD, Large SA Supplier Needs, ESCOM Supplier Development Plan, Transit Supplier Development Plan, a presentation from Citadel and Mercedes-Benz, presentations from government agencies, CSP, CCI, DPE, and IDC, to name a few. In the morning, we gathered feedback from the assignments and lessons learned from the different teams. These included capital procurement, bid design and evaluation, contract management, In the end, the team were tasked with putting together a petition for the minister. But only the one winning petition made the cut to be presented to the deputy minister on the final day of the week.
know, the one thing that you would have noticed in the actual video is that this really is a key priority area. You would have noticed that, you know, shareholder being there, you would notice the CEO of both enterprises. In fact, it was the general manager responsible for procurement of Eskom because the CE was aboard at the time. But it demonstrates that there is leadership from the top and there is support for the program, you know, and work in the procurement space generally. What my presentation will cover this morning is essentially an overview around the competitive supply development program, give you a sense of Transnet and Eskom's journey and where they are and where they're moving to, a sense of the fleet procurements that both Eskom and Transnet will be undertaking, the recent boot camp that was held, the video that, you know, some of the initiatives that came out of the boot camp that we'll be taking forward. And given, you know, the complexities in the procurement space, there are challenges that we face with which is important to highlight, and then also what are our next steps. So this is quite an important slide as far as it demonstrates the investment by, you know, public sector and the private sector. What it says is that in 1976, investment in infrastructure was 16% of GDP. By 1992, this had dropped to 4% of GDP, which remained until 2005 when the SOC started to invest, you know, invest and increase the investment. SOC have played a really critical role in this area to drive this process, accounting for around 50% of public procurement. This is quite fundamental. I mean, this is really the starting point. These slides tell a story, and quite a dramatic story at that. You know, when investment dropped, the supplier industries were shattered. If you look, that's the actual, you know, a decline in, I'm not sure if you can see the decline in investment. That's a slide on the left-hand side. And you look at the impact that it had on the supply industry. It's actually a mirror image. So as investment declined, so did the supply industry shrink. So there is this intrinsic relationship between the health of the range of capital goods to state-owned companies and the quantity of investment undertaken by the state-owned companies. You know, because we stopped investing, we should understand that, you know, supply industries are really in a very sorry state. We shouldn't underestimate the damage. Plants were sold, fields were lost, and trust was destroyed. It's very easy to destroy an industry, but, you know, the question is, how do we start to instill confidence again in these industries to invest and to grow? This is what we're here to talk about today, how to leverage SOC procurement programs so that, you know, supplier industries are rebuilt. This slide talk to the growth in infrastructure. You know, as infrastructure grew, so did imports, because the skill that was lost, you know, in the South African industry, we didn't have the capability anymore to manufacture these goods, so we have no option but to import. And this had a negative impact on the trade balance. As you can see, this is really not sustainable. You know, part of what they are doing in terms of developing supplies as a fundamental financial driver, that as a country, you know, we cannot afford to invest continuously in infrastructure if it means continuously growing our payments, our balance of payments deficit. You know, we have no option but to rectify and sort this out. What this slide is really saying is that as you move up the value chain, you know, the risk profile of developing qualitatively new complex capital capability grows, you know, which requires additional support from government for the private sector to start taking on that risk, to the point where, you know, government needs to take on investment in areas where it's just really, you know, it's strategic, but it's really not viable for the private sector to do so, because it's really not commercially viable in the short to medium term. If we think of some examples of government-led support, you know, SACL, ISCOR, and the infamous PDMR come to mind. An example that demonstrates government support, government support to a procurement process is Hydro-Québec in Canada. What Hydro-Québec did, you know, Canada is quite a large country in terms of land size. They identified high voltage switchgear, you know, which is strategic for the security of electricity transmission. So the government undertook a localization program through a 10-year procurement for switchgear. You know, given that they had sufficient demand. The procurement was awarded and premiums were paid to suppliers for 3 years. Hydro-Tibet invested in a testing facility for the switchgear, and government invested in research and development. You know, in addition, they also established a chair for high voltage electricity at the university. ABB won the tender, and because of the government investment, Canada now exports switchgears, and South Africa is one of its customers. So in 2007, you know, the department developed the competitive supply development program, you know, with three objectives in mind: reducing the cost through increasing efficiencies, reducing the dependency on imports and foreign exchange exposures, and developing niche export areas. It's really to address all of the issues that I've raised in my previous slides. There are some fundamental critical factors that need to be in place, you know, for any procurement leverage program to be successful. There's four specific pillars. Most fundamentally, suppliers invest in a stable demand platform. The more coherent the demand platform, the more coherent the response from the suppliers will be. You know, if you buy 100 locos this year, 50 next year, 5 the next year, that is, you know, if you buy sporadically, they really won't respond optimally. You know, suppliers are really convinced by scale and sustainability of a demand platform that drives supplier investment. You know, even if you have local content requirements, if the demand platform is ad hoc, it's just not going to invest. Having set the demand platform, you know, you have to have a procurement process that ensures that the supplier development process happens. It is so possible, you know, that even with a good demand platform, you can buy cheap, low-quality imported goods. Therefore, you need to have a methodology in place that integrates supplier development objectives with your procurement objectives. When you procure, supplier development objectives must be part of that procurement process, and suppliers must get the best value proposition for supplier development. The third bullet point speaks around the coordination that's required, which I referred to in my earlier slide, you know, that is, you know, the higher level of coordination that's required as you try to develop more complex industrial capabilities. And the last bullet point talks to government consensus. You know, suppliers have to come to the party. If their focus is on men seeking and lobbying the state for protection, you know, the program will fail. You know, we've had several engagements with GE where, you know, they speak to us about their engagements with South African suppliers. And whilst they say they are, you know, a few of them that are willing to come to the party, there are some that are just really not making an effort in any way, you know. They insist that GE must conform to their processes. You know, this is just untenable. So, you know, as a portfolio committee, if, you know, suppliers are coming to you to seek protection in any form, I think it's important that, you know, you really check, you know, are they making an effort? Are they coming to the party? Because if they're not, it really is deadly. You know, once the professors at the University of London, Professor Mushtaq, has written quite a lot on supplier effort. And in his view, and also given, you know, the experience internationally of countries that have had successful supplier development programs, suppliers have to sweat. So there's an equal amount of effort that needs to be put in from suppliers' point of view. So when the CSDP was established, you know, SOC procurement capability was very ad hoc, and it focused really on optimizing individual transactions. You know, it was very short term. You know, there was an engineering bias in terms of, you know, where the designs were specified, but it was specified in such a manner that it actually eliminated opportunities for other suppliers. You know, if you were, for example, if you, you know, they were designing a pen, they would design probably the tip, which is, you know, the standard is completely different from the norm, that you actually eliminate and you actually design that procurement for a particular supplier. And so, you know, there's kind of a history of really destroying the supply chain and of not investing in their supplier industries. You know, when we started the program, the idea of a demand platform was really nowhere on the SOC radar screen. In terms of execution, you know, all their methodologies were about, you know, how do they get the best price for a particular transaction without really considering supply development concerns. And, the relationship was really about how much we extract, and how can we exploit. And it really took into consideration, the relationship issues. What are the penalties that you need to consider? How do you start integrating procurement with, within the broader government resources? So the National Bank is really an industry, that would respond opportunistically, based on what is the capability they have, rather than thinking about, how to invest to meet the SOC long-term requirements. So supplier development really, required a complete re-engineering of SOC procurement practices, to move from a transactional to a long-term developmental focus, and where there isn't any longer an engineering bias, where you actually start designing for local. It's moving from a transactional, to how they can actually plan with sufficient demand and duration, for national industries to actually have confidence to invest. It demanded a totally different mindset. Planning is different. Your planning horizons are also different. How do we develop a long-term developmental relationship? SOC designed a contractual platform for suppliers to develop, in order for them to get the desired outcome. So really, it's, moving of, from a culture point of view, it was really about, this is learning by doing as opposed to following any textbook methodology. We must be willing to make mistakes. We must be willing to admit mistakes. We must be willing to learn from our mistakes so we can all start doing better. So, learning by doing is really about an effective operational approach, trying to find something that works operationally. The key difficulty about this is that it requires different operational capabilities. We need to radically transform from an operational capability because there really isn't any textbook answer. So we have to learn by doing, and that is really a complicated process. So there are really three pieces of learning by doing. The bottom-up execution, which is really about empowering your delivery organization to learn. Experimenting involves risks. You need to take a certain degree of confidence, you need to have a certain degree of confidence to take that risk. And then it's about sharing, showing care from the top. It's similar to, a child-parent relationship. It's nurturing. It's really not a bully relationship. And then finally, you have to provide support. When you're trying to do something new, you don't know really, especially when you don't know what that new entails. You need someone to guide you. It's it needs something additional, and that's as the shareholder role, that's what we've been trying to do in terms of implementation of the CSDP program. So there are really three phases to the CSDP program. It's not a big bang. It's a learning by doing process. And learning as you move up the complexity curve. As you learn to take on more and more interesting objectives and take on more risks, because you know how to manage it. We're trying to do relatively simple procurement better, moving from a transactional to a partnership logic. And really, this is where the SOCs are. We're moving from phase one, which is, doing the transactional procurements better, to actually starting to develop long-term relationships and long-term procurements, the fleet procurements. There's been a lot of work that's been done, a lot of significant learnings that have been done. There is some capability which the SOCs are weak in. And ESCOM, ESCOM's been quite innovative in the sense that they have developed a complex procurement, project management, and supply development body of knowledge, where they capture these learnings, where they capture how they actually run out those procurements, so that they can be shared. So as part of moving from the process, the first phase to the second phase, ESCOM and Transnet have at a policy level integrated supplier development into their procurement processes. No procurement takes place without supplier development concerns. I mean, essentially, this is the premise, so we've got a CSDP strategy. What the SOCs do is they've got a procurement policy that supports the strategy. There's procurement toolkits that support the policy and the strategy. And they've reorganized themselves in terms of the number of people they need, the have the functions that they need to be able to deliver on the procurement, enhancing their processes, putting in the necessary governance controls. So it's really a holistic view that they've taken in terms of how they re-engineer their processes within the organization. Now I'm going to take you through Transnet's supplier development journey. This is a timeline of Transnet's journey through the CSDP. They started off in 2008 with the National Industrial Participation Program, which is the DPI-led program. And then we introduced the CSDP program. They, took in some of the issues around, how do they start engaging the actual program into their procurement processes. And in 2011, which is the last financial year, they really started embedding CSDP in the organization. And you'll see that going forward, their 7-year strategy is linked, or should I say their procurement strategy is interlinked with their 7-year planning cycle. What's interesting, is that it really has changed the investment plan. It's changed from a vista of what can be, achieved in terms of supply development. They started experimenting in transactions, and as they got to understand better and as they got to learn more, they actually started becoming very aggressive over the last 12 months, in terms of refining their policy and refining their processes. These are some of the examples of, successes that Transnet has had in supplier development. They've been very innovative in the sense that, aside from just looking at local content as an issue, they've gone further to look at field development and export updates. It's very creative, and that's what we're looking for, is to push the boundaries, go beyond what the legislation prescribes, and in taking the program to the next level. This is an indication of some of the systems that Transnet has put in place to monitor and manage supply development. As an example, they've got localization targets, what is the actual skills development and investment in time. What this demonstrates is that it's not just at a policy level that they get to change. They've actually put, the change happens at every stage throughout the process, right up to monitoring of the transactions. And, what we're looking for is that where these companies come to report to the shareholder and to the portfolio committee, they'll be able to plot specific targets around what they plan to do, what do they achieve. And that's what we're looking for, to hold them accountable. And the plan is to make sure that, targets around supply development form part of the shareholder compact. They've made very significant progress around BEE. In 2007, 3.9 million, and across the period, it's been a 46% increase up to 2012. You can read this, but this gives you a sense of some of the areas that they've, they've segmented their BEE scorecard. Now I'm going to move to a Transnet, market demand strategy, which is their planning over the next 7 years. This slide really speaks to the next generation plans, which is the plans that we're waiting delivery of from both organizations. It's indicative because it's not formally being delivered. But what's important to look at is that Transnet has actually used CapEx and OpEx, to identify possible supplier development opportunities. There's areas like locomotives, wagons, machinery, pipelines. It shows that, at a high level, where there are opportunities. The market demand strategy will develop and transform Transnet by 2019. It's really about unlocking investments by Transnet customers. It also creates a much better platform for supply development at its 7-year focus, and the quantum is greater. I'd like to draw your attention to this area around some of the targets, and you'll note that some of these areas where the local content targets have actually been revised upwards in line with DPI designation policy. So, but these are the areas about job creation, shifting the local road to rail, and reducing the cost of business, and how do they also invest in Africa. It looks like a very complicated slide, but essentially it's Transnet methodology. When you're going to be speaking about a supply development program, you really need to think about two different dimensions. Firstly, are you spending a lot of money? You know, if you are not, then you can't really develop industry because demand platform tends to be small. Also, you need to consider industrial leverage. You know, the kinds of quantities of money required to produce, for example, a traction motor in South Africa are significantly less than the quantum needed, say, to produce, say, a nuclear turbine, you know. You have to consider that in certain industries, you know, one or two suppliers meeting global demand because industrial leverage in those particular industries are low. You know, therefore, you have to identify those areas where you are spending significantly much more money and effectively leveraging that money in an industry. Transnet organizes their opportunities in two dimensions, you know, within those two dimensions. And it's really not a one-size-fits-all. It means that, you know, Transnet is thinking really about, you know, how they tackle this issue. And what they do is they segmented it in four, you know, four quadrants. And the programmatic, which is the long-term fleet procurement, there's focus areas, and, you know, right at the bottom, give you an indication of what are the valuations of transactions. Enterprise development, as well as strategic focus areas. At a very high level, this is an illustration of the detail that's, you know, in the previous slide around what some of the areas that Transnet has identified within their business divisions, you know, how, in order to be able to put together their strategy. Again, it's indicative. We'll wait for the final details on Transnet when the plans are submitted to the department. To give you a sense of Eskom's supplier, okay, yeah, there's a slide missing, so I must apologize for that, but it's really, the slide talks to, you know, giving you a history about Eskom from the old to the new. It's important to give you a sense, you know, Eskom moved from this, as well as, you know, to the CACP, but I think it's important also for us to give you a sense of the key differences between the National Industrial Participation Program and the CACP. You know, NIP is very transactional in nature, and it really doesn't look at creating a demand platform. It accepts the imports, and it tries to get back something from another sector. NIP also is a deal between the DTI and the supplier, and doesn't really concern the procuring agents, and, you know, consequently, there's no SOC responsibility. However, the CACP moves the, you know, the responsibility to state-owned companies, and it, you know, pushes for a demand platform, and gets suppliers to compete against space localization proposal. You know, that is the radicalness of the change. It's also moving the responsibility and accountability. Just to give you a sense of some of the successes in terms of Eskom, you know, in preceding years, Eskom had a lot of success in terms of leveraging their investment in cloud. Give you a sense of some of the transactions. They've also had success in terms of leveraging BE. You can see BE here. This is the total measurement for the procurement spend, which is really that component that is earmarked for preferential procurement. You have black women-owned enterprises, black-owned enterprises, as well as emerging micro-enterprises. They also had some extraordinary successes in leveraging skills development. You know, they achieved over 7,000 skills commitment by suppliers. Some of the skills: engineering, artisans, technicians, you know, safety officers, construction managers. Eskom's investment program over the next 6 years. I mean, it's really wrapped up, you know, from 76 million right up to the looking figures in excess of 500 million. So this really put, you know, this is what they use to buy the context to develop their supplier development program. So in terms of their approach, they've defined five areas, you know, skill development, localization, industrialization, job creation, and prior development. You know, what is interesting, you know, notice that localization and industrialization, you know, localization is really about more economic activity, and industrialization is really about, you know, enabling the development of new capabilities.
So everyone uses the complexity matrix, which I referred to earlier, you know, to segment their supplier development approaches and objectives for their different procurements. You know, one thing they've added is an area for small business development to the framework, which is this last component. Again, it looks like a complicated process, but it really is, if you just focus on the numbers on the top here, this is really the six-step process for designing and executing their supply development strategy. You know, the first step is they put together, they consolidate their demand, put together their demand analysis, you know, what are they going to spend the money on. And then they look at what are the supply analysis. And then they classify, in terms of the previous slide, they classify against the matrix of whether it's small, you know, natural, what kind of coordination that will be required, does government need to support the procurement in order to see how they, you know, they design those procurements based on the capability that they want to build. And from there they look on, you know, they work out the duration of the strategy, is it big bang, is it simple, you know, is it a long-term strategy, and then they execute, and very importantly is also the last column around monitoring and reporting. In terms of their next generation plans, this is what they've given us as indicative targets. Well, probably not targets, but give you a sense of where are the possible procurement commodities. It's pretty much different. You know, it looks different to content, but the fundamentals are the same. It should be highlighted that, I guess the difference is that these SSCs are really thinking about procurement. They're applying their minds, looking at their conditions, looking at their capabilities, looking at the national interest, looking at the shareholder interest, which is the national interest, and developing the procurement strategies accordingly. And I'm going to take you through the fleet procurement. Fleet procurement are, you know, any of those long-term relationships, long-term partnerships, procurements that you will enter in probably 7 to 10 years. It's not such, you know, day-to-day transactions procurement that you'll be embarking on. What this slide tells you, you know, the DPE actually undertook a study, and what we considered is that, you know, for context to replace their old locomotives and buy new locomotives to expand capacity, what our research suggested was that context would require about 148 locos per year for the next 20 years to meet the target of expanding volumes by 6% per annum. Transnet's market demand strategy is saying that they need 152. So what we're saying is that we're probably in the ballpark. You know, it's quite a hefty number, which means that it's a brilliant demand platform we can work with. What are the objectives of, you know, Transnet's fleet procurement? We must make sure that we get best value for money. We must make sure that it's both investment, economic activity, employment creation, and the building of world-class industrial capabilities. And finally, we must ensure that it drives the process of transformation in the locomotive supply chain. You know, we're not leveraging procurement in the hope of achieving supply development and empowerment. We are procuring supply development and empowerment as a core dimension of value required from the suppliers for the money we pay for them. So there's multiple objectives that need to be integrated into the procurement process. I think the first point that needs to be emphasized is that the lowest cost doesn't necessarily mean that the enterprise is getting the best value for money. For example, a cheap locomotive may be, you know, used a lot, may use a lot of diesel or electricity, meaning that your operating costs are high. It may require high maintenance and regular replacement of parts, which means that it's out of service, which impacts your revenue that you can derive from them. In addition, a third area is that, you know, that needs to be considered is the extent to which the supply will contribute to the development of a sustainable, global, competitive national industry, and the extent to which capability are developed by that supplier that can be used in other industries. You know, standardization is an issue. Standardization concerns are also need to be built into the procurement. You know, in that the few models you buy, the more economies of scale you get, the lower maintenance cost you will have. All of these things, all of these capital costs, life cycle costs, industrialization and risk, all of these issues need to be considered and balanced. So therefore, cheap doesn't necessarily mean best value.
how does one find a balance between all of these things? You know, it depends on sophistication of the railways and the development of a national industry. And if you have a low volume railway, you know, which is relatively underdeveloped, sticking point is Zambia, then it would make sense for you to go with the low capital cost, you know, because high life cycle cost and low technology industry, it's fine for you to do the simple stuff. But in the case of South Africa, you know, where we have a high volume railway, we have an industry, you know, moving from an intermediate to advanced stages, an ability to use the industrial capabilities to develop rail and for mining and chemicals. You want to really, you know, lock yourself into leading technologies. The point is that, you know, you have to consider all of these issues, you know, together and not in isolation of one another. And I think as a portfolio committee, you must be the guardians of moving us onto that, you know, advanced industrial trajectory. So this slide demonstrates that, you know, procurement has the potential to make a massive difference, improving the localization from, you know, 33% to approximately 80% rather, you know, program. If this is done properly, we should absolutely transform capability of the industry. As a portfolio committee, again, I guess your role must be to ensure that, you know, this procurement can do dramatic things. And that's what you should be looking for when Transnet and Eskom come to you, or if Transnet come to you with their plans. Also, the procurement has the potential to catalyze capabilities in different places, you know, that will increase our national content across a range of sectors. You know, example, traction motors for the rolling stock, belonging to mining, transmission power, etc. You know, therefore, you know, if we buy cheap, low-quality goods, we won't be able to use it because really won't be good enough to use in other sectors. I'm going to talk to you about Eskom's Fosabag pre-procurement. And Fosabags are really used in whole house power station to filter out toxic gases. You know, as Eskom is re-equipment fleet, the annual demand is quite large. You can see over a period, 2011 to 2050. All of these are the tonnage. And so therefore it creates over periods quite a significant demand platform and you know, great potential for a localization strategy. To get a sense of what the process entails around filter bags, it's really the fiber production, weaving and kneading of the fabric, sticking, and you know, this is what eventually goes into the pipelines. You can see the fiber produced from synthetic material. Fabric is weaved according to Eskom specifications, and then they, you know, I guess for each power plant the specifications are different. And this is really saying that there are opportunities between the fiber cost and needling. There are opportunities to localize the fiber production and needling, as it comprises 86% of the cost of a filter bag. So it's quite a significant localization opportunity, which is important. So if you look at the strategy, you know, the fabric is weaved by 7 suppliers, and only one of these is locally based in South Africa. You know, the bags are stitched by 4 local suppliers, so in the short term, you know, what IFAM will have to do is optimize what they can with the demand, you know, do what they need to do. However, in the long term, they will have to engage with other buyers to be able to get the sale that they require. They will probably need to talk to the likes of Sappho, you know, to actually reach that sufficient demand to make the local manufacture of the service production possible. I'm not going to talk too much around the boot camp because you guys have seen the presentation, but essentially, you know, this is really a no small task, but you have so many organizations in the room really thinking about this complex thing procurement and how they actually, you know, find design processes so that they think of government objectives right up front. You know, by aligning some of the objectives that we managed, we got SOC speaking to each other, we got national departments speaking to each other around a range of different areas. You know, related to different around, you know, we spoke to policy departments and they got to understand what the IFAM and Transnet challenges were around, you know, procurement itself. You know, there was a training element to it, you know, some of the speakers we got were around just showing and demonstrating best practice around what works, know, and what are some of the lessons that IFAM and Transnet, you know, they were able to share with us so that we can start enhancing our internal processes. And then also by just giving a sense of what those plans look like, you know, indication of you know, where we're going to with supplier development. So really it was about, you know, for me it was the greatest thing is that we were trying to enforce a change of mindset as opposed to telling SOCs, you shall do. It's about understanding what are their complexities, listening to them, and looking at what are the resources within government to be able to assist so that all of our objectives at the end of the day are achieved. Of the you know, key action points that came out of the supplier development bootcamp, which we're taking now to the implementation stage, historically, you know, SOCs, or the supplier development program itself, you know, we didn't provide SOCs with a mandate to pay international or national suppliers any premiums to support national industry. So it became clear that, you know, even the shareholders' interest, even government's interest, that, you know, imports are decreased. Even if it means paying a certain level of premium, because, you know, increased national economic activity, it creates taxes, and those taxes accrue back to the state. So consequently, what we need to do as a department is to develop an explicit policy, you know, on how and what are the premiums that SOCs can pay, because the reality is that they are being paid at the moment, you know. Then also what we found, you know, is that when you specify technical requirements for any piece of equipment, it's very easy and unintentional, I guess, to exclude national industry. And consequently, you know, it's critical that from the moment the organizational requirements are defined, these are the very moments that supply development concerns are taken into consideration. What we find is that it happens too late in the process, either just before awarding or just after awarding. It's too late. You've got to actually start designing for local. And then it's around, you know, developing guidelines for, you know, how do you start treating suppliers differently? You know, I guess the SOCs it's got to be a relationship that is both ways. You know, you've got to make sure that you provide enough incentives for them to deliver, and you've also got to make sure that you actually develop penalties. And then the 2%, really, the 2% bond that they currently subscribe to is, they price into the procurement. They price it into their bid. You know, so it's about us really getting specific guidelines out there that will help SOCs. And then finally, to consider the issue of export offsets. So, I guess the plan with us people is a waste of time, and I guess that's how people always develop plans, you know, and always get something done. This is a really problematic area for state companies. You know, skills. It's a huge skills shortage. Transnet and ESCOM have got really advanced programs to try and train their people, but they get poached by the private sector. You know, I think an example, Transnet trained about 14 of their procurement people on an executive procurement program. Today there's only one of those individuals left. The rest of them have gone primarily into the banking sector. You know, so this is really an area that we've got to pay a great deal of attention to. Another area which is quite problematic, which the DG also alluded to, is legislation, you know. I guess our whole approach to supply development leverage process, you know, has been to build capabilities, design procurement strategies and processes, you know, based on opportunities and complexities that are associated with the different organizational requirements. And the triple PFLA is really an attempt to impose a one-size-fits-all approach, you know, which we believe can only be described as, you know, in a very clumsy manner. You know, consequently, the PFLA in particular is an enormous threat to the SOC's ability not only to achieve supply development, but to extract the optimum enterprise value from the procurement. You know, what the triple PFMA subscribes is this 90-10-80-20 price rule, which doesn't allow the or afford the SOCs enough leverage to really, you know, put supply development objectives as part of the procurement. You know, 20% and 10% really is not sufficient. It's got to be, you know, in fact, depending on the type of procurement, in some instances you're looking for 60-40. You know, in some instances, yes, pure transactional 90-20, 80-20, 90-10, 80-20 type rule will work, but not for the kinds of things that Conservation IFCOM are planning to embark on. The designation process of the DTI is very problematic in as far as, you know, we're concerned with local content. You know, there's no consideration of skills development, export offsets, manufacturing design, etc. You know, they're reducing a multi-dimensional process to really a one-dimensional process. And depending on what the procurement objectives are, we really need to have flexibility in you know, given the complexity of some of these procurements. My final few slides, or is it the last slide, is really around next steps. I said it before, we are yet to get the plans from Transnet and ESCOM, and we're hoping that Transnet and ESCOM will, you know, provide the portfolio committee with an opportunity to really drill down into the details of what their plan entails. You know, what are the specific things that we're looking for around, you know, some of the targets that need to be met. So we thought we'd leave you with a slide in as far as when they do come to the venue, what are the kinds of things we're looking for? You know, what are the first thing is around, have they actually learned from their lessons? You know, what are the changes that they've made in terms of some of the lessons that they've learned? What are, you know, from an organizational perspective, procurement, all of those areas, you know. In terms of the slides I presented as indicative areas for opportunities, what are those areas? What are the targets in those areas? And then also we need to see a compelling methodology for implementation. You know, it's one thing to have a plan. You have to have a strategy that accompanies it. And how do you actually mobilize the resources that you have at your disposal to be able to deliver on it? And the skills there. And also, how are they going to report to the portfolio committee and the shareholder on their delivery and their deliverables? You know, so I think that's what I'd like to leave you with, is really to, you know, get them to talk to you about their plans. It's the only way we're going to make sure that it happens. We tie them down to it, and we make sure that it happens, you know, monitors, and we actually start also disseminating some of the, as they roll out their supply development plans, and as they you know, hit stumbling blocks, how do we actually help them in those? Thank you. I leave the questions to the DG. I said I will leave the questions to the DG. I'm just kidding. Too.
How do you monitor this and ensure a successful implementation of this? You know, one of my concerns, you know, every time when we meet with entities, I think all of them raise the issue about losing skilled people to the private sector. And here you have Transnet training people and then they lose them. I think one of the members during one of these interactions we had, I think it was with Transnet, that, you know, what is it that they do or can do to try and keep the people within the organization. And I think it's also a matter that the department has to, you know, pay some attention to, because we can't just continuously have the same problem, where, especially in a case where government spends money to train people and within a short space of time, and that is when they've acquired those skills and they just walk away, you know, without any consequences to that. I often remember, you know, I think in one of the, it was Milupi, yeah. You know, where there was, I think this will come in very helpful, because the small local business people there really had many complaints about their relationship to that project. Let me invite members. Honorable Hololo, Dr. Kwena, Honorable Bauman, Honorable September, and Honorable Kwena. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank the presentation from TPE. And say that really it was very, very commendable. Mm-hmm. It's a very beautiful plan, ambitious. The first one will be around the question of the confidentiality of the document itself. Is it still a document that we cannot show it to anybody? Should we keep it secret, confidential, or what? That would be the first one. The second one is on the GE, General Electric project. I know it's a very old plan, according to me. I first heard about it 2 years ago. And I know that person like Edwin, actually, the one who's behind this one, is very passionate about the General Electric project. And keep it up, Edwin. It's a very good one. But my question now around this project is that when is it going to start? Because the first time I heard about it was 2 years ago. I think we were somewhere in Stellenbosch at the autumn school, and they spoke a lot about this project. Where? Transnet. Oh, Franzhoek, yeah. Thank you very much for that. So that my question would be, when is it going to start happening? Because a lot of people, actually, if I can tell you, they're very, very interested in this project. Our local businesses, actually, they want to see themselves participating. As you are correctly putting it, it has to be localized. We need to get suppliers from within the country. Now, the other question, actually, would be, are they going to, for instance, train our local business, our local suppliers? Because, you know, I've seen a list of things that should be needed, wheels, seats, mirrors, and all those things, including those, those sacks, those bags that you're talking about. Are you going to help our people, actually, to solve these things with the aim of trying to empower our local businesses? I'm interested in knowing how is it going to be rolled out so that everybody benefits out of this project, which is very, very important. And the last question here. In addressing the high rate of unemployment and infrastructure investment, are we not also contemplating, for example, copying what previously was done by the previous government of employing a lot of people around the railway sector? For instance, in the past, you know, currently we have a problem where there's a lot of copper theft and all that, which can be done by our own people by inspecting those railway lines, which cost the government a lot of money. If we could maybe try and employ more people that are going to be physically inspecting these railway lines so that we curb this problem of copper theft. Thank you very much. Let me pause there for now because I've got many, many questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think for me, this skills, loss of of people, training them up and then losing them, and the sort of type of person that we need is absolutely critical and has been stated before. In your boot camp, did you discuss how you might keep people like this in the positions? You know, what sort of things, you know, are there things that you can write into contracts, for example, so that one gets a longer term sort of, and I mean, is do we actually have facts, you know, as to how critical it is, or is it just sometimes, but I suspect it is a critical area. And then I think what has come through in your presentation for me is the all of the certainty that we are now looking for. And as Parliament, it's very difficult. This is a hobby horse of mine. Unless we quantify stuff, we as Parliament cannot oversee it. And so I think we're certainly moving in the right direction. And we've had presentations recently from Eskom and Transnet that they've been starting to do forward planning. So I think and the other thing with this huge infrastructure spend, we as Parliament have got a huge responsibility, but we can only do that if stuff is quantified and we can actually, you know, see that moving forward. But, you know, what I'm doing is asking my family comments, but... And then I want to just pick up on private sector thing. I think it is very concerning, especially if there's money out there. But I think that as we begin to develop the certainty within our SOCs and the certainty of how we're moving forward, the private sector, in my opinion, if there's certainty, I'm sure they will come to the party. But they do need to know that. And then of great concern to me, as we are moving forward, what has been discussed, and I know we're still waiting for this report from the task team on the SOEs, but there is a concern that by 2017, ESCOM, I think it's 2017, or is it 2019, you know, the build program comes to an end. What is the forward thinking? Because within all of this that we are doing now, there needs to be something beyond that, because that's a certainty that we do need to have. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you for the presentation. The first thing that I want to say is I think we should appreciate the leadership that the shareholder is giving here in putting this together. This is, you know, quite a number of months after we met with all the entities, and we pointed out all the weaknesses in putting together all these different programs. There's quite a lot of time that has gone by when we had our own workshop with them in Omni West Coast last year. The second thing that I want to say is really derived from our oversight that we have done. And the first one that we've seen with Transnet, while they showed us they are holding so many trains, locos per day, very impressive and so on, but over that whole, over and above the program that they're having, over the listing of a tender that is given somewhere else, which in our view does not support the localization program. If you can assist us with that, we've seen that in Gauteng, and we saw that the decision in the difficulty of the one makes policy and the other one, in Transnet, they took this decision. But I think you've got to help us because we don't understand this thing that, yeah, the shareholder decision is what we want to do, but we see a decision elsewhere that is opposite from what needs to happen. Why is there this tender that does not support the localization program deriving from that? That's what we saw at Transnet. And then, and really, it speaks to the thing that you said, that You're talking about the 148 that needs to be rolled, the logo, and then Transnet said 152. Within that thing that I'm asking this question. I think we obviously saw the same year in Cape Town also. But further in Cape Town, we saw two other things, and that is in particular the report. In the Cape Town one year, the other year, there's a great attempt that they are making. But then how it speaks to the actual local areas of what you do, for example, the shipholding thing, how you connect that to the local areas, is something that doesn't come through sufficiently of how they understand the micro-reform that needs to the micro-reform that needs to happen at these local areas where we need to create all these jobs and where we need to change around these local economies. One doesn't always get that come through us sufficiently, and especially in Saldana. There's a huge program that government has got. And the same thing, you know, all the sort of offshoot stuff that government speaks about in this wonderful program in Saldana about the entire infrastructure. One of the weaknesses that we saw there, you're not going to achieve stuff in Saldana with the skills deficit that you are having there. For many reasons, it's the location of the area, it's the coastal poverty problems that we are having, but there are some things that you must do because the line, the fishing line and all of those things, you know they're there. But that doesn't mean you are the only one that needs to take the responsibility for that. But the truth is, the one weakness in there is you see the section where the community needs to participate in enrollment. It's not there. Now, if you don't fix that thing, it exacerbates poverty, it exacerbates skills deficit, it exacerbates the plan that we actually would want to have on the simple thing that I have, example that I had again, which is the ship building project. So you would be able to keep the locals and people there, but you could at the same time upskill also. Maybe with Transnet and so on, the department should think on how can we further do something about the skills deficit problems in that? Because you do have infrastructure. You have wonderful places that we have seen that has the ability to address that also. So I want to say here that the other thing that we saw was that there's a legislative problem at Kudus that does not expand the problem both in relation to finances and whatever else the skills development, the other Department of Higher Education needs to. I think the finer detail would be in our report, but it is a problem because it means that you're not expanding. Lastly, on the targeting that everyone is asking, may I ask, in the growth plan, it talks about what you had to do in 2010 and 2011. And what you have to do in 2012 and 2013, everything that you are doing and have said to us, does it, you were supposed to lay the foundation in 2011, 2012 now, you're still laying the foundation, and then you're supposed to, 2012 and 2013, you're supposed to review progress and make any adjustments on the policy. Does all of what you said to us fall with in that, or? Or are you behind?
I think, Chairperson, sorry for coming 20 minutes late. I might have missed the introductory. Actually, I did miss the introductory remarks of the DG. And perhaps please excuse me if I had come off him in what I'm going to say about the rest of the preparation. Number one, the video that you presented here is full of too much self-congratulation. You must be careful that when you put together a video, market yourself. Don't go for an overkill and find every everybody else say, oh, this is very lovely, oh, we do nice, etc. We don't do that. Because that will undermine your audience. Where the people must be able themselves to say, my goodness, what great one. I'm going to put this point. And it was a very excellent video. Was very infinitesimal self-congratulation. So try and revise the video and stop the self-congratulation. That's number one. Number two, the investment in the procurement in all these many areas of business, very, very dismal. When we went to Saldana last week, we were completely appalled. Let's put one example. When one of the presenters there said they are spending this 4.9 million, and only 4.9 million went to the local community. Now I tried to use my little arithmetic and found it was just actually 1%. So even with a big operation like that, it's only 1% deposited with the people there. It's absolutely great. Because what it means that now, all of the taking place is that we are disemboweling the effort, taking out the animal, and leaving pink juice, contents, the observed juice, and one of us creating work in the process. But only it was being 1%. And there was an impassioned plea made by the local business community today. I've never seen people so well organized. There's been people coming for us. And actually saying, here we are. We have actually been begging management team to please partner with us. And management is running like away from us like a wind. In an era like that, when management should be hitting that there is that infrastructure, a business forum, say, oh no, here are guys that should come up. Now the next point, I expected the person that the presentation is by phone call. Because it's deeply eager to know. Talking about the procurement. They must talk about their own procurement as DP, Mr. Matula. They are very capable leader. If you talk about how, from the budget that we allocate to the ministers, you yourself, and actually, from your own side, SDPE, handle procurement on your own SDPE, but apart from the state-owned companies themselves, Caltech, Eskom, etc. So it should be a bifocal presentation, and it should not be a surrogate presentation where you speak on behalf of the they do talk directly about their own procurement. So I didn't want that you should have a duplication of oversight. The whole problem of DPE exercise oversight or SOC, and we as parliamentarians also exercise oversight. So we've heard all the things from the relevant state-owned and companies themselves. So I thought yours would be more on what we give you, what we actually do in terms of DPE itself. Right. We approve, of course, the help that you have given in the presentation. But the other weakness in this presentation, we would like to just call you for the manager, is that you only highlighted procurement strategies and plans of only two high-profile SOCs, Transnet and ESCO. I heard very little about the others. Nothing about FAA, and of course, the aiding is expressed. And, Janelle, Infarco, and Sample, and nothing. I would have imagined that you should have stepped in, should have had a workshop with them, say, like, you want to make a presentation on procurement. Sample, what are your highlights? Infarco, what are your highlights? So that it should be a holistic thing, instead of the full form of the presentation resting on Transnet and ESCO. You see, that's what I found. I find a missing in that thing. Otherwise, it's an excellent presentation. Now, I also found today what's missing there is the reference to sauna. You see, every year there's a stable minister there. And the president, at the leadership of the president, locked themselves up to a shop that statement. It's not just issuing a statement that is just made for the sake of window traffic. And we are supposed to start the tone in the whole country on on how we should operate. Now, government is a shareholder in the company. We expect that in your strategic plan of procurement, you should factor in some of the elements of the SONA. Otherwise, what it means is that we just have a big show there every year, ceremonially, because of the nation of that. And then the SOT just came over now in the boardrooms and tell their own thing, wearing their own studies and doing the SOT without any reference to the grand plan of the nation, which is incorporated in the SONA. So I was going to say, Chairperson, that some of the remarks I said are not very complimentary, but they are not aimed at discouraging you, they are aimed at building you so that we should move forward. Together in tandem and not bringing some dissonance. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be brief. Chair, just a few things. I think in South Africa we have this mindset that if it comes from overseas, it must be better than what we can have here, imported later. I'm of the opinion that local is lacquer. And I am very happy to see that there is an encouragement to produce things locally to halt this massive importation that we have and actually look at creating jobs by... We have the manpower, we have the skills, we should be creating things in our own country, manufacturing things in our country that the rest of the world wants to buy from us, because we have the manpower, and let's face it, we have a population of unemployed that need to be human resources, absolutely. Manpower is not a good word, very right, it's man and woman power. In this month especially. But on a serious note, Chairperson, we have a country full of people with such potential, and I don't think we've all even tapped the start of the potential. But in this, I think the problem is things like working at Transnet and Eskom, it doesn't seem attractive sort of niche for school children to go into. School children want to become lawyers and doctors. No one tells them that they can actually go out. And we saw, as Honourable Colonel said when we went to Salt River, we saw people, young men and women training, who actually sit there and build trains. They build mechanisms to put the trains together, the wheels, the carriages. I mean, this is fundamental, and it's so important if we want to grow the infrastructure of our country. And I was encouraged to see how many students were there, but I was also slightly disappointed that there weren't more students. And the chairperson actually said to one of the students, are you going to go to your old school and market this idea? Tell them that you can come and work here and get trained on site. And he said to the chairperson, I actually hadn't thought of that, but that's a very good idea. I will go and tell my school that. But we can't expect just the kids that are learning at the moment to go back to their school. I think we need to embark on a process of encouraging young South Africans to go into this kind of market. The same thing happened when we were at Kusile. There were a lot of foreigners working at the Kusile power plant. And I asked, I see a lot of foreigners working there. And the answer was yes. In South Africa, we have an extreme shortage of coded welders. Now, that is stuck in our mind, and my fellow colleagues will now bring this up often, because it was, to me, it was so illogical that in our country, we should have a shortage of coded welders, and that we were importing them from the Far East. And I think that we really need to look at building a skills base in our own country by encouraging young people to go into these areas. Chairperson, then just one last, or second last thing. Again, I agree with what Honourable McQuena said. I do think it's disappointing that we don't see the other state-owned entities mentioned in this document. And Chair, on my page 43, I'm not sure what your page it is, one of the bullet points is, currently aside from the limited contractual penalty for bad performance, there's no mechanism in place to incentivize or penalize supplier performance. Now this, I think, is exceptionally important. It is something we have to address. And I use again the example of Medupi and Kusile, where some of the massive power delays were due to the fact that suppliers were simply not supplying our state entity with things that they were contractually bound to do. Now, at the moment, things are under control. But these kind of delays and this kind of supplier contractual breaking could have brought the country to a halt. And I think we need to realize that and understand the importance of it. And then, Chair, if I may, just one last thing. From the Department of Public Enterprises side, I think we also need to almost force the importance of better communication between DPE and our state-owned entities. And I say this because I've contacted our sort of connections in public enterprises for help in areas. And I have noticed that the state-owned entities actually treat the Department of Public Enterprises with almost a level of disdain, almost a level of how dare you ask us that. And I think some way, somehow, we have to address why there's that sort of hesitance to take hands and work together and why there's almost a protection of territory which is going on. Thank you, Chair.
Those are the questions, DJ. I think you've taken note of it. Let me just clarify something. And I'm not holding a brief for DPE, but that presentation or that document that we have before us here, it's a framework, and I think we do expect the department to provide some guidance to the SOEs. You can't have each and every state-owned company developing their own framework or policy. The department is responsibility of oversight over companies, and it must be clear on what it is that the department expects from them. Just to leave them to develop their own approach, and we'll have a number of confusing things, but there must be some basis on which they work and want to know that they will be held responsible for. So I thought that this is really what we wanted the department to come and brief us about. So I think other issues we can raise, but this is really what we wanted and the department to come and brief us on. DJ, like I said, I think you were taking notes and should just respond to the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, and let me thank members for the questions that they raised. Very, very important and in some senses complex questions that have been raised. Let me first indicate that we understood the request of the committee to really be about the procurement of companies. It said so explicitly that we should talk about the company and not necessarily about the department. Of course, we're quite happy to present similar information on how we procure the department to the committee, but we were not prepared because we were not asked to do that. Now, in that regard, I can say, and I'm sure when you look at our annual report, previous annual reports, and the one that will be coming, that we comply with applicable legislation when it comes to procurement. We comply with the EE. And so we're not necessarily asking SOEs to do things that we ourselves are not able to do. And so I just need to take that point. Of course, as I said, we will if required, give you a breakdown of our own procurement practices. We, in regard to, for example, dealing with SOEs and SMEs in 30 days, we've been one of the departments that have been doing it. In fact, in some instances, we pay SMEs in less than 30 days. When we haven't done that, it would normally be because the invoice was received late and that type of thing. The last count, there were only two instances in the last quarter where we didn't pay as many as in 30 days. This is something which, by the way, the Treasury are tracking. We are now required on a monthly basis to tell the Treasury, because there's a high level of focus in this space of paying SMEs in 30 days. Equally, by the way, we would expect the SOEs, because in their cases, withholding payment can cause serious problems for companies and the suppliers. So we should take it for granted that this thing is going to work if some of those things, foundations are in place, you know. Pay your suppliers in time. But I'll deal with some of the bigger policy type questions, and my colleague can deal with the rest of the issues of detail. I think Honorable Kuran raises a fundamental question about what is this infrastructure built as we develop our country in this way. What is the relationship between the public sector and the private sector? What is the relationship between the state and private capital as such? And I think in our country, we really need to have a review of this issue. We have really have to take an approach in regard to this issue, because I think that has been repeatedly said. There is absolutely no way the state can undertake this massive investment program on our own, because we confer a number of constraints. There are things we have massive leverage over, and for a start, we have leverage to the companies between Ecom and Transnet, the two biggest companies in the economy. And we know that as a whole, the state accounts for more than 40% of our economy. That's massive leverage. In fact, data will demonstrate, investment, capital formation in the economy has currently been driven by state-owned enterprise as a driver. And because we have a mixed economy in that nature, it must be the case that we deliberately seek to crowd in the private sector, crowd in private investment. And the essence of this presentation has demonstrated is the precise ways in which that can be done. It can be done if we deliberately go out to identify in the private sector which are those suppliers that have got the capability, that have the potential to supply, and when they supply, to grow on the back of the supply, because they have a long-term demand platform. And we're saying that the more we are able to demonstrate visibility of our investment plans, long-term visibility, the better the private sector are able to respond. If they don't know what we're planning at stake, if they don't know the level of appetite that the state has to involve them in these activities, then they will not invest. And so part of this is really getting our house in order so that we can give that visibility, we can send those signals to the private sector. And not only that we can actually establish practical ways of interacting. The sort of conversations that were shown at the boot camp. Let all of the people sit in the room. Let's understand what capabilities are there, what are the challenges. Because there are a range of instruments that are not only within our portfolio as DPE, but other departments, science and technology, as indicated, the trading industry with incentives and so on, to support enterprise in South Africa. So when we speak about supporting enterprise, in fact, actually, the budgets, massive budgets, which the Minister of Finance announced, are really to get our manufacturing industries to a space where they can participate in our program, in our investment program, but they can also participate in international business. So I think this is exciting. However, you do have a point that we, at the top, at least at the leadership level, we're not engaging in these strategic matters sufficiently, in my view. Because, and partly it's because the private sector organized business itself is very fragmented. We've seen now there are different groupings, all of different interests and so on. And in some ways, therefore, the challenge is on the private sector, how do they organize themselves to have a strategic engagement with the government. On the part of the government, I think that we need to reach out a lot more to the private sector. We need to send the positive signals about this partnership. And so as you'll see, every opportunity we get to address the private sector, my minister, myself, officials of the department, we do that. We're talking to the banks, we're talking to the automotive industry, and various stakeholders that are interested in what we do. So I think that there is some way to go here, because I don't believe that we have an option. I believe we must urgently get it right, a strategic conversation between the state and the private sector with regard to how we jointly work together. It's not about who's going to move first and who's going to follow. It's about how we really move together as we execute this ambitious plan. You asked about the preferential legislation. Now, we are very pleased with the way in which the legislation has been modified to allow for a greater degree of localization, to allow for a lot more meaningful black economic empowerment and all of those other objectives. It has recently been modified. And I guess as far as that goes, possibly there are no issues. But it's in the implementation. It's in the interpretation for purposes of implementation where it really matters. And so we are engaged with the Treasury so that we reach alignment in this space, and there are no misunderstandings that could lead to missed opportunities, because there could be. If we misunderstand what the legislation actually requires, then we will miss out on opportunities. And as I said, really for me, it's finding that balance between what the legislation seeks to achieve, which is value for money, economy and efficiency in our procurement practices, whilst allowing for us to create a space for suppliers to develop and for us to deepen industrialization in our economy. So it's going to require a level of sophistication and change of mindset as opposed to traditional perceptions and approaches to in this space. So we are engaged with the Treasury in this regard. Of course, the level of the threat gets rid of the strong wind, but the enterprises, the SOEs, are saying that they are content because of the messages that they are getting about how they might apply the legislation as well. And so what we are saying is that we must ensure that the legislation is not interpreted and applied in a way that is going to undermine what we are trying to do. And so I think something which we will manage. And I think once we get a handle as to what works, where there's win-win in regard to the contents of the legislation and the outcomes on the ground, then we will get into a more stable pattern and create the predictability. Because it's all about certainty and predictability. If both private sector and the state-owned enterprises perceive the institutional and regulatory environment in which they work to be a clear or to have particular negative disincentives for them, they will not respond properly. And so part of the work that we've presented here really depends on us creating a very clear policy and regulatory framework about what is admissible, what is possible, and so on. So there's quite a lot of work that we need to do in creating that cohesion within the government to enable these businesses, because really businesses, to get down to doing the business. Honorable Mukwena, I do take your comments to heart. I want to deal with one or two other points that you raised. I would submit that the very essence of this presentation is firmly located in the spirit of the State of the Nation address, which spoke about us in the state undertaking efforts to create opportunities for employment, skills development. All of those themes that were in the State of the Nation are represented here, with this particular emphasis on localization as a means of supporting employment and creation. With particular reference, in particular, I can remember that the last State of the Nation address spoke very directly to us in the guise of Transnet, where the President did make mention of Transnet's 300 billion market demand strategy over the period of 7 years, and this work is intended to support the rollout of that massive program. And so on. So there is absolutely no contradiction between what is here and what the injunctions of the President were upon us. Similarly, the State of the Nation spoke to ESCOM, but with particular emphasis on the price of electricity, the long-term price of electricity, which we have to watch so that it doesn't undermine our efforts elsewhere. It is something which we are looking at, particularly as we approach the new multi-year price termination process, which will be concluded in time for next year. The bill program beyond 2017. I'm sure Edwin will do with that, as well as Jackie will also address that. But just to say briefly that the Integrated Resource Plan 2010, IRP 2010, does give us a sense of what are the different components of our energy supply is going forward. And so Medupi, Fusile, and other coal projects are part of it, but there are other things which are in the pipeline, including in particular nuclear, which is beginning to move forward as we speak. But my colleagues will add to the details. The issue of employment and the emphasis on labor intensity in all of this. Well, clearly, I think that is something which is a very concern, and it's been a concern for a long time, that in all of this there be an emphasis on labor absorption. And I'm sure that a lot of what colleagues will talk to you and what was demonstrated speaks to how you in fact actually create opportunities for more and more people to come in. But let's say that these are high value activities, and high value activities typically require higher levels of skills. Where there are opportunities to absorb people immediately, that's not a skills clearly. And if Transnet in their security, procurement of security services, should target young people and so on to more and more people, already is okay. But I think that for long-term industrialization, we need to move through this skills value chain. We must be creating a lot more critical and high-end skills. Because if we don't do that, then there will be massive low-level skills that are employed in the projects, in the construction stages of the projects. But they will not be able to undertake certain activities. And the example about imported welders is a good one. So we must prevent that. But that is also going to require a particular alignment which does not yet exist through all of the institutions in the state that are critical in the delivery of skills. Right from basic education, the math and science emphasis, all the way up to institutions of higher education. That value chain is critical, because the value chain through which all the required skills must be delivered. I mean, the state-owned enterprises are doing their own things right now. But they require all of that to be embedded in a national institutional system that guarantees the delivery of skills over time and well into the future. So I think that is a very important area for us. I think I'm going to stop there, and maybe I'll see if there may be other things that I will pick up. I'm going to give my leads to the other women on the side.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Chair. Just to respond on the issue on ESCOM in terms of the bills up until 2017, in terms of the integrated resource plan, the first plan that we had, Kusile Ndupi and Kusile Ndupi Ngula form part of the IRP1, which by 2017 Kusile will come to an end. And included in that plan also includes the diversification of our energy mix. That includes also the renewable energy project, which is the wind and solar, the 100 megawatts plants that are currently underway. In terms of beyond that, in terms of RE1, the projects have been identified, the funding of that has been identified, 3%, so over 60% of it has been secured. Beyond that, currently there's RE2, which showed what the energy mix needs to look like over the next period. In terms of that, a determination is yet to be made by the Minister of Energy on who and what, who builds in terms of the IRPG. In terms of that, as a department, we also have been very proactive in terms of preparing ourselves when the decision is going to be made, so that we ready our SOCs in order to implement, because I'm sure they will play a role in terms of that. So we are also being very proactive to make sure that when that decision is being made, our SOCs are already ready in order to deal with the implementation of the RPT. Just the second other point that I just want to indicate in terms of what the DG was indicating in terms of private sector participation, it is a very important element. And in terms of what we are doing as well as the department, we're very much mindful of the role of private sector that needs to play. And in that regard, as a department as well, we began to also centralize and also begin to capacitate ourselves in such a manner that we'll be able to have a coordinated manner to deal and interact with the private sector, commercial banks, DFI, so that we are all aligned in terms of what you want to do, share, and have the dialogue in terms of our plans, how we want to go about doing it, and that type of partnership. So as a department, part of the sub-programs within strategic partnerships that we'll be looking at is the funding aspect of it. And that part of funding aspect of it looks at how we actually interact with the private sector, that financial institution, and get that coordination going. So I think that's quite fundamental, and also do recognize that. So those are the two key areas that I'd like to report, and I'll hand over to Cinder.
I'm going to respond to why is it that we only see Transnet and Eskom plans on the table. It's really a simple question about scale. You know, if you look at what Transnet and Eskom are planning to spend over the next few years, I mean, what Transnet and Eskom spend in a week compared to what SAA and any of those enterprises, it's incomparable. So just given the pure scale of the procurement spend over that period, it makes the supply development program viable. However, it doesn't mean that as a shareholder we're not looking at what the other SOCs are procuring, how they're procuring, where they're procuring, and what sort of initiatives they're going to be focused on in terms of changing their procurement to align to some of the objectives that we have in the program. So within the department we have programs around transformation, and some of those areas would deal with procurement. So it's not to say that we've just selected Eskom and Transnet, we are looking at the entire portfolio. But in terms of a supply development program, the Eskom and Transnet scale make it viable.
So they're two different levels. So the first thing that we said that's required in order to get buyers to invest is sustained demand. So, and that requires a sustained investment program. And the problem with Danel, Pascal, et cetera, is they don't have sustained investment programs. So SAA has very lumpy, big procurements for when they renew their fleets. And of course, that we focus on to leverage. But if SOC doesn't have that sustained investment program, then the demand is limited. However, and that's what our rationale for, correctly or incorrectly, that's what our rationale for focusing on Eskom and Transnet. Because a sustained, and as Amita said, they probably spend more in a week than what the others spend in a year. However, they were at the boot camp. So Danel, SAA were there, and particularly Danel has got some extraordinary skills from the development of the Roy Falk and their relationship with the Air Force that we can actually use in Eskom and Transnet. And we're encouraging this dialogue across the SOC. So we are trying to build up a dialogue, and we are trying to build up the kind of capability transfers across SOC. But, we clearly can debate the issue. Our logic thus far is the focus is on the Eskom and Transnet because they're spending, what's it, $800 billion and the others are, not even 5 billion. But we are trying to develop the procurement capacity. Everyone's procurement capability should be developed. The other thing just in terms of GE that one wants to mention for the portfolio committee. So the GE program has started and is rolling out, and it's quite interesting. Just on plane last night, I sat next to someone from Transnet Freight Rail, an engineer who had returned from a trip to the GE Central locomotive factory in Erie in the US, where he had been trained in Six Sigma and other lean manufacturing disciplines. And so he's now got a project of applying that training to enhancing the Fission Saldanha corridor. So over and beyond the immediate issue of those locomotives, the relationship with GE is now being leveraged to enhance Transnet Freight Rail's operations beyond and operations as opposed to just for locomotives. about locomotives. There was a recent movie about, I didn't see it, but there's a recent movie about a kind of locomotive that runs out of control. And, you know, it's a very horrendous thing. If the brakes fail, if something goes wrong, if the locomotive gets derailed, the amount of damage is horrendous. So the quality control, when you are buying a really technologically advanced locomotive, as we are buying from be it GE or EMD or Mitsui, needs to be extremely, extremely high. And hence the suppliers need to master these disciplines, because at the end of the day, GE will bear the liability if there's an accident or there's a problem. So it has to make sure, before it allows a supplier into a supply chain, that supplier will produce to global quality standards. And this is the point that Samida was saying at the beginning, is that the response of South African suppliers to opportunities to not just become part of the GE supply chain in South Africa, but GE's global supply chain, has, with some exceptions, notable exceptions, been extremely disappointing. So we do need to have a culture change in South African suppliers, where they appreciate that, you know, if you want to move into a global market, you've got to up your game, and you've got to take the pain that upping your game requires. And as Amelia says, there's an academic shutdown that's significantly on this topic. So what does that mean in terms of the portfolio committee? Because there's no doubt that there are communication problems. At the boot camp, we had a large South African supplier talking about the equipment the supplier had invested in to respond to the investment program that's sitting idle. Okay? So the information that you pick up, that you can provide the department with, around suppliers that feel they are not getting reasonable opportunities from the SSC to participate in the program, we will investigate. Okay. The other side of the coin I want to make is also be sensitized that when the suppliers come to you, are they really coming to the party? Are they willing to conform to the kind of quality standards required that when you're dealing with mission-critical infrastructure whose failure can bring the country to a halt, are they willing to take that special extra effort to come to the party, or are they hoping that, you know, we're just going to, because they're South African and local, we must buy from them? Because in investigating some of these issues, we have had some of those. So I don't want to be defensive, I want to be balanced. There are definitely legitimate concerns that suppliers have where the SSC are not giving a fair opportunity, but there are also legitimate concerns that the SSC has when the suppliers are not making the effort. And we call on you as the portfolio committee to assist us in getting all parties. The SSC need to play their part, but the South African suppliers also need to play their part. And then we can find, we will have the SA Inc. approach. Something that we are going to do is the department in the minister needs to rub a stamp, say that date, so I'm not going to give a date. But in the pretty near future, we're going to be holding a supply development summit, where Eskom and Transnet are going to share their plans and are going to share some of the changes that are taking place within them. And we're going to ask suppliers to give their responses. The way we think about it will actually give associations the opportunity to prepare. So we do recognize this need for enhanced communication, enhanced dialogue, and we do request the portfolio committee to play a critical supporting role in that process.
I think when I deal with the issue of how we involve communities, and to say that clearly one of the we've recognized with these mega projects is the extent to which they involve a range of stakeholders, and that how we have not necessarily always been engaged with all of the stakeholders in that regard. Two key stakeholders have been the provinces and local government. And so in the course of last year, the minister started having these provincial engagements in which we've invited mayors and so on. To talk about precisely the issue about how do communities get involved. Because ideally, really, there should be no mega project that begins in a particular locality without the local leadership and local stakeholders being involved. And so at a model, we need a model that says before, in fact, even as you plan, once you have identified where the project is going to be located, you know, begin to involve the community at its early stage so that they can then determine precisely how they're going to participate in it, what they require to be able to be part of that project, what capabilities they need to build to enable themselves to be part of these projects. Because it can't be the case that these mega projects, communities are reduced to just mere observers. So there is something to be said there, Chair, and we started this a process of involving the community. Now, of course, retrospectively as well, if local communities in Palale or in Mpumalanga, where Kusile is or elsewhere, feel that they don't have meaningful participation, I think it's something that we should take up. And so, in those instances, please bring that information to us, and we can see how we work with ourselves to address that. Especially because these projects still have a long way to go. And so it's not like, you know, there might not be a future opportunities as well. Thanks.
Thank you so much,
and
your team. And thanks a lot for this report. I'm happy to hear that you will be working on the supplier summit. I think that's something very important. Because if we require people to meet certain criteria, I think you should inform them about it. But it's also important that just to have some dialogue with them. And I think that also what you just said, DJ, about local communities and so on, or stakeholders, I think it's very important that from the onset, people have an input and, you know, clarified, you know, whatever needs to be clarified. When the project starts, we have an uninterrupted kind of work that takes place, and you don't have marches and, discussion of property and so on. I think that saves us a lot, actually. I think this then brings us to the end of this part of our meeting. Once again, I'd like to thank ADG for this. I think this is something quite important for all of us. Then we'll adjourn this part, and members will remain, and we still have some work to attend to.